Hi, this is Bill Hoppe, Buffalo Sabres beat reporter, and I'm joined by Nick Sabato, Buffalo Bills beat reporter and sports editor of the Niagara Gazette. And welcome to episode 27 of Buffalo Press Box. Nick, quite a surprising trade by the Bills this morning. They dealt Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans with the sixth round pick in 2024 and a fifth round pick in 2025 in exchange for a 2025 second rounder. I mean, we knew his production had declined. We knew he was pretty unhappy. But are you surprised by this? What's your take on this?
It is a little surprising given the fact that they're about to eat $31 million in dead cap. I mean, mm-hmm. So essentially they're going to pay Diggs $4 million to not be here than if he was here. So that's the surprising part to it. But in the grand scheme of things, I think it's probably a move that had to happen.
Mm-hmm.
For more than a year now, it's been cryptic messages. It's been brooding. It's been, awkward press conferences, refusal to meet with the press from Diggs. All the rumors swirling around, he clapped back at him a couple of times, but more often than not, he just kind of let them fester. Like, mm-hmm. There was never a time where he came flat out and said, "Hey, I want to be here. All these rumors are untrue." He just kind of let them fester. And I think for a team that isn't necessarily accustomed to drama, and when drama has occurred, they've moved on from it pretty quickly. I think that is probably just, it just got to a point where maybe it was too much.
I mean, do you know why he was so unhappy? I mean, he's obviously paid handsomely. I mean, he got the ball. I mean, obviously he didn't get to a Super Bowl, but he won a heck of a lot of games, four straight division championships. I mean, what was the problem? I think that's perplexed a lot of people.
I think there is some idea within him because he's a very hard worker. And I think there's, even with all his fashion stuff, he's a hard worker. And I think there's probably something in there that says to him, "I work this hard, everybody else has to match me."
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people are working just as hard, but in different ways. And I don't know if he deals with that all that well. But I mean, the idea that he's competitive, wants to win a Super Bowl. Well, I mean, are the Texans in any of a better position than the Bills to win a Super Bowl at the moment? I mean,
no.
Where else can you go outside maybe Kansas City that's going to have a better chance to win?
It's very true.
I mean, maybe San Francisco, but, the Bills have won. Since he's gotten to Buffalo, the Bills have won more games than any other team except the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
So, who knows where it's really coming from. But, I mean, you look at it and what he went, I think, 11 games without – or maybe 13 games without 100 yards in a game after, having five in the first six. And a lot of times he was just kind of MIA. It's a very Belichickian move by Bean. He's going to take the hit now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you fast forward a year, what if his production continues to decline? I think they probably could have got another productive year out of him. But what is he still the same guy? Is he going to catch 100 passes? Is he going to get 1,200 yards? And you run the risk of saying, we're going to run this back with him one more year, and he'll be 31 by the end of the season. And if his production declines, there's no value at all in him anymore. And essentially, they're just going to have to cut him and eat less dead cap, but they're not getting anything in return for him. And I think whether it's his personality, whether it's his age, whether it's his contract, it's pretty telling that the best value Brandon Bean said he could get was a second round pick next year.
Mm-hmm. While packaging other picks with him.
Correct.
And I mean, so, you talk about him being a productive receiver and whatever, in nine games under Joe Brady, 44 receptions, 388 yards, one touchdown. I mean, those aren't really elite receiver numbers. I mean, Do you think he fit with Joe Brady's vision, or is it just what did he hit a wall? Like, what happened under Joe Brady, in your opinion?
I mean, it could have been a combination of things. Maybe he was dealing with an injury nobody knew about. Because, I mean, the production was such a steep decline.
Yeah, in season, too.
In season, yes. And maybe it was Josh Allen realizing that he didn't need to force feed the ball to Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you look at it, to me, it goes back to that Chiefs game where Allen threw that 65-yard pass right on the money, and it went right through his hands.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about we could have been talking about an all-time great throw, and it went right through his hands. And then you fast forward to the end of the game there, and it's 2nd and 9, and they need to extend the drive down 3 late in the game. And Allen bypassed him wide open underneath for a play in the end zone. And that play was open in the end zone. Chris Jones had pushed Deion Dawkins back into him, and it was incomplete. But to me, maybe even 10 weeks earlier, Allen's given that ball to Diggs, no question. I think maybe there's a little bit of, you know, I don't need to force feed this guy the ball that much anymore. And you can see that in the targets. I mean, I think he had 10 plus targets in like 6 of the first 8 games or something like that, and only two of those games the rest of the year. And then you look at, you know, his comment the other day when, you know, RG3 is you know, saying that the Bills window is wide open as long as Diggs and Allen are together, and then there's a little, you know, fans getting a back and forth about why, you know, if Diggs is essential to Allen's success. And, you know, someone said he's important but not essential, and Diggs commented, "You sure?" I mean, that to me is maybe the writing's on the wall a little bit, that maybe he wasn't going to be the focal point of the offense he had been for 3.5 years.
So, also that 65-yard pass that went through Diggs' hands, or whatever you want to drop, whatever you want to call it. I believe when he got up, he motioned that the throw was just off.
Well, I think, or come he on, said, dude. or if he was, you know, maybe this close to catching it, or I don't, who knows?
Oh, okay, true.
Who knows? But I don't know. It was a weird season with him. I mean, you look at some of the other people they've moved on from. I mean, they moved on from Sammy Watkins almost immediately after Bean got there. LeSean McCoy wasn't a headache, but they moved on from him a year earlier than they probably could have. Cole Beasley, you know, injuries and conspiracy theories kind of caught up to him, and they weren't willing to prolong that.
He's at it again, by the way.
Well, sure. I mean, that's who he is.
Anyway, not to interrupt. Go ahead.
He was a much more humble guy when he came back the second time around. I mean, the only one you can point to is Von Miller, and the Bills are pretty adamant that all that stuff is going to go away. I mean, Matt Araiza, they got rid of him before the legal process unfolded. The Bills just don't do distractions, and I think if Von Miller was just another guy, or they could have financially moved on from him sooner, maybe they would have.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bills just don't do distractions like that. And whether it was perceived, because there were a lot of questions, and you could understand at a certain point how he would get annoyed with those questions,
mm-hmm.
but he also didn't do anything to really squash them. And even came out and flat out said he likes to be mysterious.
Oh gosh.
But I mean, when your actions are brought up to the other teammates, that can be draining. And it's a distraction that maybe people don't want. So, I mean, that's kind of gotten them in the position they're in. And, you know, Bean said he had been getting inquiries about him, and this was the best value that they could get.
So, you know, you mentioned the inquiries in your story, and that, you know, teams had, I guess they had talked before, but why now? What was the latest Twitter exchange? Was that the final straw? I mean, why didn't this happen, a few weeks ago, or even I guess
his contract
year,
before his contract was fully guaranteed?
Oh, okay, never mind then. I'm sorry.
No, I mean they could have done it before they guaranteed it, the contract became guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Bean kind of danced around questions as to why they got rid of him, why it was the right time, blah blah blah. He did say that things started to heat up this week with the Texans, and maybe that social media post was the last straw. I'm more inclined to think that he was emboldened to say it because he knew he was on his way out. But you never know with the guy, and you could understand why that would be the last straw. I mean, to me, that was more inflammatory than anything. The cryptic messages are one thing, but when you're questioning the team star quarterback, that's a little different.
Of course. All right. So I guess the biggest question now is, how do they replace him? How do they replace his production? I mean, they signed Curtis Samuel this offseason, Mac Hollins, but I mean, you can't just replace Stephon Diggs. I mean, how are they going to go about this, in your opinion?
Well, I think, you add a second round pick, and that would seem like, to me, it seems like they made this move to make another move. Even though, Bean's not going to tip his hand at this point, but I think you make this move to make another one. Now the question is, how do they do that? They could try to find a veteran to trade for, like they did with Diggs. Mm-hmm. The problem is they don't have the same kind of cap space. I think after this trade, they're down to about $4 million or so, mm-hmm. and they still have to. They're probably not done adding to the roster regularly. Probably not done. They're not done with, filling out the roster for training camp or their draft picks. They are due to get $10 million from Tre'Davious White after June 1st. So you have to factor all that in. So then you look at a guy like T. Higgins, who wants an extension or asked for a trade from Cincinnati because extension, talks haven't really been there, and he's going to play on the franchise tag this year. But the franchise tag is over $21 million. That would take an awful lot of finagling on the cap to get him. And then maybe you look at a guy like Brandon Ayuk from the 49ers, who has back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. He's only 25. And he wants a long-term extension. And maybe the 49ers can't afford to do that, with him, with all the other guys they have. But he's going to play on a fifth-year option that's $14.1 million. And that's a little easier to do cap wise to fit him, but maybe they don't want to wait till June 1st to do that deal. Maybe the 49ers don't want to. So I think the most likely option is they try to use some of their extra picks to trade up, and they would have to give up a whole lot to get into the top 10, to get one of those three guys, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze. And getting into the top 10 is probably what you're going to have to do to get them. I mean, you're talking maybe two first round picks just to get to 10.
Ooh.
And it doesn't, trading up for a receiver historically over the last 20 years hasn't really panned out. I think 17 or 18 guys have been traded up for receiver wise in the last 20 drafts. Only two teams have won Super Bowls with guys they've taken on the roster still. So that's risky. And I mean, I think they have enough capital now that if they wanted to move up into the middle of the first round, they could do that and maybe go after a guy like Brian Thomas Jr., because that's probably where he's going to fall. I would be surprised if they're going to take a receiver. I'd be surprised if they sat at 28 and waited. But I mean, there's also other options. I mean, Bean said that, they're not done adding, and just because it doesn't happen at the draft or before the draft doesn't mean it's not going to happen before training camp. So maybe a late move is planned, but I also wouldn't count out them just rolling with what they got. Maybe they get a guy in the second or third round or something like that, or they don't have a third round, but a second round and a or the fourth round. But that might put you right back in the same spot next year, trying to get one in the first round to replace Diggs, because eventually you need a number one guy. But you look at, you know, what some of the other teams have done. I mean, aside from those couple years with Randy Moss, you know, what receivers did Tom Brady have to work with that were elite? And they never won a Super Bowl with Randy Moss. He had obviously Rob Gronkowski, the best tight end ever. But in terms of receivers, you know, Julian Edelman was a really good player. I don't think anybody would consider him, you know, top 5 to 10 receiver at any point in his career. They didn't feel any. You look what the Chiefs did the last 2 years. I mean, they traded the best receiver in football, Tyreek Hill, and won 2 Super Bowls without him. Even last year, you know, they just didn't have a whole lot there, and they still won a Super Bowl. I mean, you look at what the Bills have, Dalton Kincaid, who looks like he's going to have a really good career. I think they need to do more to make him a focal point of the offense. Curtis Samuel, they signed. We'll see what they get out of him. I don't think he's a number one guy, but he could be a number two. And Khalil Shakir is still ascending, and you know, maybe he's ready for an expanded role beyond the slot. And then you have Dawson Knox, and I think people are kind of sleeping on him because he had such a down year. I mean, they extended him, and then he just never really found a consistent role in Ken Dorsey's offense. And even when he came back from his injury this year under Brady, I mean, he played, but he wasn't really a receiving threat for the Bills. But he had a really good camp last year, maybe the best camp of his career. And you know, maybe he gets back to that this year. I mean, when you look at it, it's really interesting. They started out with those two tight end sets with Kincaid and Knox, and Allen averaged 30 more passing yards per game, had more touchdowns. You know, when those two guys were both playing more than 50% of the snaps. Now, the caveat there is the Bills were 3-3 in those games, whereas they were, 8-3 when they weren't playing 50% of the snaps. But I think they have enough talent to continue to contend. It's just a matter of how Joe Brady uses them, and it's a matter of what they get on defense, too, to supplement things. I don't think that they have to go out and say, we need to get a number one receiver right now in the draft. I don't think that you don't want to make a bold decision just because you feel like you need that position. I think they did that with Kyer Elam, and they so far have been burned on it. So, you know, I just don't think it's necessary to say, hey, we need this receiver right away if you're the Bills. I think they have enough talent, and it's just a matter of putting the pieces in place.
Interesting. So how many people are throwing away those yard signs right now, do you think?
I don't know. Did you get rid of yours?
I sadly, I don't have one. Your Allen Diggs 2020. I mean, they seem to come out every year. Allen Diggs 2024, 2023, 2022. I mean, the number of lawns around here that have them are, it's something.
I mean, it's really a fascinating deal. It's, you know, the man had more receptions than any receiver in football since he got to Buffalo. They won the second most number of games. I think when you look, if a guy is still unhappy at that point, I don't think there's anything you can do to make him happy.
You're right. I was surprised when I saw the deal, but I mean, I totally understand it. I mean, if he wanted out, then I mean, if he wants to go to the Texans, and the Texans were what, maybe one of the league's biggest surprises last year, and they have a very good young quarterback, but I mean, I don't, it's not an upgrade.
I mean, and you look at the Texans too. I mean, is CJ Stroud going to continue to ascend? He looks very good, but you never know. But then you go to, I mean, he was the unequivocal number one receiver for the Bills. But you go to the Texans, and they've got young guys that, I mean, Tank Dell is really good. coming off an injury, but really good. And they have Nico Collins, who had a really good year last year. They just traded for an extended Joe Mixon. They just re-signed tight end Dalton Schultz. I mean, is he going to get upset when there's not enough balls to go around in Houston next year? Who knows? I mean, but again, too, I mean, like Belichick did so many times, the Bills, I mean, not only did they were they willing to part with him for a pick next year, but they traded him to a team that is going to compete with them in the AFC. I believe they even the Bills go to Houston this year. But they just weren't afraid to trade him within in the conference to another contender, and that was something Belichick did. I mean, geez, traded Bledsoe to the Bills.
Very true.
I mean, you traded Richard Seymour to the Raiders. I mean, it's
for a first rounder.
Yes, I mean,
I remember that trade.
There was
Richard Seymour's a Hall of Famer, but I couldn't believe they got a first rounder at that point of his career.
Right, right. I mean, so clearly, you know, the Bills weren't afraid to trade him within the conference, and maybe that says something about where they think he is.
Definitely.
Or who they think he is.
Or both.
Or both. I mean, it's a wild deal. But now here the Bills are, you know, they've really, really, you know, overturned the roster. They went from having some of the most longevity in the league to all of a sudden, I don't want to say they're starting over, but it's a very different locker room.
For sure.
You know, I think it's interesting. I think the Bills are now interesting. What are they going to do? I mean, they could go after a number, you know, a second round receiver or whatever, and maybe he turns into a first round receiver. But I don't know. I don't think that they have to necessarily go out and get that top guy. I think they have enough pieces in place that they could be a pretty high powered offense, especially if Allen goes in there every week, not, you know, worried about I have to get the guy the ball 10 times, or Gabe Davis doesn't have a catch, I got to get him on the ball. He can kind of spread the wealth around right now without thinking twice about it. And really, even if they kept Diggs, people still wanted a first round pick at receiver, but that would the likelihood of getting Diggs level production out of him as a rookie is not high. So you're still waiting right. Another year anyways. I mean, there've been some guys who came out right away out of the chute. Jamar Chase had a really good rookie year. Justin Jefferson, obviously. But usually it takes time. And, now all of a sudden things are pretty fascinating.
For sure.
So now, Bill, we'll transition from the fascinating to the maddening. Buffalo Sabres.
That's right.
The Sabres are still alive in the playoff race. I think it's wishful thinking. They're hanging on like with a thread. But here they are. I think they'd probably have to go 5-1 in their last six at worst, 6-0 at best, and get some help.
Yeah, and I mean, they're still alive, but I mean, the odds are just so, so low. I mean, and again, we talk about, you know, as we record this, six games left, 5 points back. But I mean, there's three teams in between them and the Capitals. I mean, there's six in the wild card race. I mean, Detroit, the Islanders, and all of a sudden the Penguins have surged up, and the Sabres have played more games than every one of those teams. I mean, even Washington, I mean, you know, they destroyed them last on Tuesday, but I mean, Washington has played two fewer games than the Sabres. So, I mean, it's great that that they're from their standpoint that, you know, it's April and they're still alive. I think at one point, you know, that would have meant something. But I mean, at this point, well, they're probably happy they're still alive. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, it's going to, unless they have a miracle finish, it's going to end up being a bitterly disappointing season. And, you know, this latest homestand has been just, it's kind of resembled this season. It's just a mixed bag of, I mean, highs and lows, where you go from Tuesday beating
the Capitals, a very thorough win, a win in which they fell behind early and they just roared back. And I mean, it was a fun, entertaining game. And I mean, they made the Capitals, I mean, the Capitals, after watching that game, I mean, you wondered how they were in a playoff spot. I mean, they were just terrible. And they've been a team that either wins a close game or gets blown out, it seems like, most nights. But I mean, Capitals just, I mean, they were not impressive. And then you go back to the Leafs game on Saturday, they get shut out. I mean, Leafs fans took over the building like I've never seen in my lifetime, in my years of covering the Sabres. I mean, it was at least 90% Leafs fans. I mean, maybe more. It was something to behold.
It was embarrassing.
I mean, it's changed over the years where, I don't know, it's gone from, I remember going to games in the odd where it was probably still majority Sabres fans. And then over the years, 50-50 to, you know, 60-40, 70-30 Leafs fans taking over the building. But I mean, I've never seen it like that. I really haven't. And the fact that, yeah, I mean, fans are so willing to give up their tickets, sell them for a profit, and you know they've checked out. I mean, yeah, I mean, that's your building, and the fact that it was, I mean, whatever, let's say at least 17,000, 18,000 Leafs fans was something else. I mean, the building, I mean, Austin Matthews scores that goal. I mean, it erupts like, you know, some Sabre, like Tage Thompson scored his 50th goal. I mean, it was that loud. I mean, it was that anticipated. So maybe that happens again next year. Maybe it doesn't. But I've never quite seen it like that.
I mean, what do you make of, you know, the people who, there are people who are criticizing the fans for the failures. Like, I mean, that they're too toxic, that they sold their tickets. But to me, why, after 13 years, it seems to me that they have every right to complain.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're,
and why would you keep tickets when you can, like you said, you could sell them at an immense profit because the team isn't going anywhere at the moment. Like,
yeah, I mean, that, I mean, yeah, it all factors. I mean, the last 12, 13 years factors into all these decisions, and fans are fed up and they're all too happy to get rid of their tickets. I mean, I'm sure most of them feel like they've, as we talked about last week, just kind of wasted money on tickets, and that's their chance to, you know, get a lot of what they spent back. I mean, their fans more often than not, or at least half the time, I'd say, they don't leave the rink satisfied. I mean, look at this past week. I mean, if you went to four games and you're a Sabres fan, you probably left the rink happy twice with two strong wins, two entertaining wins, and just maybe dejected twice. I mean, not just, they lost, yeah, whatever, wasn't a great game, or, you know, like it just got beat by a better team. I mean, just dejected. I mean, you fall behind 5-0 to Ottawa in the first period. And if you were one of the Sabres fans there on Saturday, I mean, you see a shutout, you see your closest rival just have their way. So, I mean, Sabres fans, they haven't had many happy returns on going to games recently, and go back to 2011-12, whenever you want to go back to. That's why they're all too happy to sell them and recruit some of their investment.
I think, when you look at it on the whole, I've heard a lot over the last week or so. A lot of people have reached out to me, you know, feeling jilted by Terry Pegula, because he started his ownership in 2011 saying that the sole existence of the Sabres was to win a Stanley Cup. And I think early he tried to deliver on that, right? Like they had that splash signing, his first off season. When that didn't work out, you know, he cleaned house, hired Tim Murray, embraced the tank, went out and spent, you know, money on guys like Ryan O'Reilly and Evander Kane and Kyle Okposo. And it seems to me after that didn't work out, he kind of threw up his hands and said, well, screw it. I mean, you look at it, maybe it wasn't embarrassing to Terry Pegula. Didn't think it, or maybe he didn't think it would be embarrassing to have all those Leafs fans in the building, because that's how NHL teams generate revenue, is through ticket sales and concessions and merchandise. You know, the NHL doesn't have the same, you know, revenue sharing like the NFL in terms of the amount that they get from TV deals and all that. But maybe it did get to him a little bit after that game, because he was there. He was there against the Capitals, I believe. He was in the building for the first time in quite some time. But, I mean, even if the team was good, and if they're good, people are going to overlook more things. But why go to a game where the seats are falling apart, the food isn't very good, the team isn't any good, and the tickets are expensive? I mean, that's beyond irrational. Like, who would want to do that? And, you know, maybe this experience has woken him up a little bit, but hasn't spoken about the Bills, I believe, since 2019, hasn't spoken publicly about the Sabres since 2020. He's in many ways an absentee owner, and maybe finally people have gotten his attention.
Perhaps. And the points you make about going to a game, I mean, yeah, I mean, those are issues they have to address, just with the seats. I mean, the seats aren't in good shape. They're the original seats, and food, whatever have you. But I mean, to me, as much as those probably need to be addressed, I mean, the biggest issue is winning. If
100%.
If you win, you'll fill the building. I mean, Sabres fans have proved that. I mean, even in up until maybe four or five years ago, I mean, if you weren't winning, they'd pretty much fill the building.
I mean, Bills fans, well, it's a different animal because it's more about the party, right? With the NFL, it's a once a week deal. It's kind of about the party. I mean, there are people who buy season tickets just to party. They don't even really care about the game. Yeah. But that it's not like Harmike Stadium is some, you know, luxury building. I mean, it's one of the most primitive in the league, and they're willing to fill that out.
For sure. And I mean, KeyBank Center is, I mean, it was a nice arena when it opened. I mean, it was part of the arena boom in the mid to late 90s. And there are things that need to be addressed. And they're getting the new scoreboard. They're getting the new roof. you know, for me, next would just be seats. They certainly need to address some things, because if I was a fan, I don't think I mean, and my season tickets were, you know, in some of wherever. I mean, I probably wouldn't want to sit there just because you're sitting in a whatever 27-year-old seat there, and that's, you know, not in very good shape. So I think they're working on enhancing that fan experience and enhancing the rink and giving it some of the care it needs. But basically, I mean, it's all about winning.
Yeah, I mean, you think about how many fans, especially if you're season ticket holders, they're either coming right from work to the game, you know, for a normal 7 o'clock start, or they had very little time between work and going to the game. Maybe they didn't have time to eat dinner. You go there and the food is expensive and terrible. I mean, terrible. And then the concourses are so narrow, and it's almost like a free for all at the concession stand. I mean, who wants to deal with that? But again, the other part is, like you say, is the winning. They have somehow made it through the entire season pretty much going win one lose one the whole way. Like, what their longest losing streak is, what, two or three games?
Is it four?
Maybe it's four.
But
four seems more likely. So, like, if they win and they have a home game the next time out, you almost have to think, well, what's the point of going? They're going to lose. That's what they always do.
Well, they've been maddeningly inconsistent.
I mean, it's wild. I can't recall anything like it where you're pretty much going the entire season win one, lose one.
Yeah, and to me, that's why one of the reasons why this homestand, which concludes on Friday against the Flyers, it's kind of a microcosm of the season.
two terrific wins, exciting, strong, whatever, however you want to describe them, and two just, I mean, bad losses where, I mean, you leave the rink and you're just like, what was that? So, but for them to be alive, they have to be right now. I mean, they have to be kicking themselves because you look at these teams ahead of them right now. I mean, Washington has a minus 35 goal differential. They, like I was saying earlier, it's like they lose 7-3 or they win 3-2. I mean, the minus 35 goal differential usually doesn't get you in the playoffs. Detroit is a pretty good team. They had a big lull. I think they're a legitimate playoff team. But, you have the Islanders, they have a minus 27 goal differential, and they have 15 overtime losses versus five from the Sabres. I mean, the Sabres have six more regulation overtime wins than the Islanders, and they're even a zero goal differential. But I mean, the Islanders are up 4 points. I mean, the Penguins haven't had a good season. I mean, they've been a big disappointment, but they're 2 points ahead of the Sabres. I mean, that last playoff spot was there, is there, and they have to be kicking themselves because if they got more games at overtime, they'd be right in it or in that spot or it,
Well, if they
really in the
showed
thick
up
of the
on time
race.
to more games,
Yeah. If they had better first periods.
I mean, what
But if they just.
they're minus 20 something in the first period and plus 30 something in the last two, like that's wild.
Yeah, it is a wild stat how bad they've been in the first and how they've gotten things going in the third. But I mean, it just get more as we've talked about, so much of today's game is just getting to overtime and how it plays out. I mean, whatever, but you've gotten a point, you've gotten something from the game, and they just haven't gotten enough games to overtime. And then just, you look at how some of their schedule went. I mean, they lost to the Ducks twice. I mean, if they take care of business against the Ducks twice, I mean,
Well, even, I mean, against the Leafs, with 0 for 6 in the power play, maybe they score on
their
the power
power
play a
play.
little bit more often, they win.
Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's going to be one of the big. Or is one of the big things and will be one of the big things when you analyze this season is just the power play. Because if the power play was even decent,
Middle of the road.
if it was just, I mean, if it was anywhere close to where it was last year, they'd probably be in a playoff spot because, I mean, throw those goals into some of these games. I mean, would it be a difference maker for sure?
I mean, I think I don't see any way Matt Ellis can come back next year.
I don't know. I have a lot of respect for Matt Ellis, and I'm not sure what they're gonna do.
But he, I mean, whatever it is, I mean, he's the guy in charge of the power play. It ain't working. And I think there are things that they need to look at hard in terms of their starts. Typically, the coach falls on the sword for all that stuff because you can't get rid of the entire team. So I think they need to figure out whether Don Granato's message is still getting through to them, that they're not able to show up so much in the first period. Or when you look at the team, I mean, they're so young, but at the same time, it's really only an age. Like, they've got guys who are playing 300, 400 NHL games.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of guys who've been in the league since they were 18, 19, 20, and they've been around 6 years,
So
5 years, whatever.
they should know how to be pros at this point. And maybe that's something that's lacking in terms of, do they know how to show up and be a professional every night? I mean, you look at the Bills, they were 6-6, but there was really no panic. And I never thought Sean McDermott lost the locker room because they never got blown out. I mean, they had their slow starts, but they never got blown out. It's really 2021's last time they were blown out. Whereas the Sabres, that, I mean, it's a different animal, right? 82 games versus 16, 17. But I think the reason the Bills were able to right the ship is they had a bunch of pros. They had guys that understood when it was time to get down to business. And maybe that should be in question for the Sabres at this point, because a lot of those guys should know what it takes to be a pro every night and get through an entire season. And I don't know. That's the problem. I think they need to look at it hard this offseason.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling how they haven't been able to more or less start on time. And some, I mean, some of it, there's been some bad luck in it where they didn't get a key save, but I mean, and they're, you know, where they or they didn't finish chances. But when you're outscored that much, when it happened, I mean, when it happens consistently, I mean, and it's not like they're falling behind 1-0. I mean, the Ottawa game was 5-0. I mean, and Ottawa's not even good. I mean, 5-0 at home. And yeah, I know you're coming off a Western road trip and whatever, but I
You should
mean,
still be able to put up a fight.
yeah, that was one of the oddest periods I've ever seen. It really was, and it just makes you scratch your head because as you said, I mean, they get going later in games, and some of that, I mean, sometimes that teams are up 4 goals and they're not attacking like they were early on, but I mean, they have managed to get back in games and make some of them interesting. But I mean, yeah, when you're falling behind consistently by multiple goals so much, I mean, it has to be addressed somehow.
I mean, you look at, you could say maybe they need to add more veterans, but they had veterans and that they didn't make an impact in that regard. And at this point, if you've got a 24-year-old who's been in the league for 6 years, how much are you going to get them to change their ways at this point?
Well, I mean, they still can, I think. I think at a certain age or time in their
Maybe
career,
a few.
players are what they are. But I think at 24, I mean, or whatever age, I still think there's time to evolve and develop and change. So I don't, I mean, I'm not sure why they don't start on time so often. It's mind-boggling. I think Don Granato is stunned by it, but yeah, unless it's addressed, I mean, I don't know what's.
I mean, I think the only way you can address it is maybe you have to move on from some people.
Well, I mean, there will be changes, but as I still maintain, I would stick with Don Granato. They have to stick to something here.
I think if they do stick with Don Granato, I think maybe he's going to have to take a more forceful hand at times.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe. I mean, if
And
you're a
is that
coach,
in him?
well, I mean, I don't, by nature, I don't think that's him. But I mean, if you don't evolve as a coach, I mean, you're not going to last long. So, I
I
mean,
mean, you look at a guy like Rasmus Dahlin, who is superb. I mean, one of the best defensemen in the league, maybe top three.
Well, I don't think he's top three this year, but
I mean, overall, he's a top three talent at defense in the NHL. In any given year, maybe he's not a top three player, defenseman this year, but in terms of talent, he's top three every year. But if you look at him. He plays so many minutes and he's so good and he's so, I mean, he's easily their best player. I don't know how much critique he gets because there are times where he's loose with the puck, times where he's nonchalant with the puck, times that he's out of position because, I mean, he's so good that a lot of times he can make up for it, but sometimes he can't. And maybe a guy like that needs to be coached a little bit harder so he can tighten up his game more often. Or maybe it's just the amount of minutes he's being played, but you don't want to let that get too out of control. Because I mean, we've seen guys who have a really, great start to their career, and then all of a sudden they're a guy who bounces around because, they're not consistent every night. And I worry, the same for Owen Power. I mean, he came in and had success so young. This hasn't been a great year for him. Can he turn it around, or is he destined to be a Tyler Myers type who has a nice career, but hasn't really been able to get back to the level he was as a rookie.
Well, as far as Darlene goes, I think when you're on the ice as much as he is, when you want him to play as aggressively as he does, mistakes are going to happen. That's just the
Well,
way
I
it
don't think
is.
he's a
Now,
malcontent.
what's
He's not a
that?
malcontent. I'll
No, he wanted clarify. A lot of his mistakes are just out of aggression, frustration, wanting it so badly. So
I'll clarify that. I don't think he's like a malcontent. Well, I'm going to go out and do whatever I want.
No. But I mean,
there are certain guys who just need to be coached hard sometimes.
Well, I mean, I think from everything I've seen, he's open to coaching. I don't think he's set in his ways in any way, shape, or form. So I think he's open to it. And I really do think he'll continue to get better. And I think the same for Owen Power. Owen Power hasn't had the best second season. I think he was much better as a rookie. I don't think he's had a bad season, but I don't think it's been great. I still believe that he'll develop into one of the league's best defensemen. I mean, we're still talking about a guy that's 21. He's at 170 games, nowhere near his prime. So he was labeled as a Hedman type, and it might take 3, 4, 5 years for that to happen, if it ever happens. So
I mean, it did for Hedman.
Yeah, so I wouldn't get down on him. But yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, they're so talented, and you see it early, and there's bumps, and in the end, it ends up taking, you know, a couple hundred games or several seasons for them to really become what you expected.
Speaking of bumps, Devin Levi is headed back to Rochester.
Well, I think this was the plan all along.
The playoffs, yeah.
Right. I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has had an incredibly heavy workload, and I think he's showing some signs of that affecting him. And so they recalled Devin Levi a couple of weeks ago so he could play in those back-to-backs. And he played very well. He also got a relief appearance. He played well. But they don't have any back-to-backs left. So, I mean, they sent him down, and Eric Comrie can back up again. But, I mean, Devin Levi is going to be the guy there. He's going to, in Rochester, he's going to get the net as much as possible, 2 out of 3 or 3 out of 4, like whatever it is. I mean, I think he's already played some back-to-backs, Friday, Saturday, Saturday, Sunday. So you're going to continue to see that over the next few weeks here. And then assuming they make the playoffs, which they probably will, he'll be their number one in the playoffs. And that playoff experience is going to be vital for him. I mean, he's had a unique rookie season in that he started the season as a Sabre starter. He started 4 straight games, and he's gone up and down since then. I mean, he's more than capable of playing in the NHL right now. It's just that Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's been better, and Devin needs to play, so he's going to play in the minors. But I think these next several weeks, couple months, whatever it winds up being with Devin Levi, I mean, those could be his final weeks in the minors ever. I mean, there's a good chance that next year he graduates to the Sabres, and he shares the net or is backup or whatever they figure out with whatever workload they work out with himself and Devin and then Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. I think it'll be those two going forward.
Well, Bill, 2 weeks left in the season, less than 2 weeks left in the season. Have you started planning your vacations yet?
Our vacation was planned a while ago.
Oh, have you purchased your Hawaiian shirts yet?
For Ontario, I don't think so.
Oh, what are you saying? It doesn't get warm in Ontario?
Is that the style? I don't know.
Well, we all know that you walk to the beat of your own drum.
That's right. And I really don't wear Hawaiian shirts, so there you go.
No, Bill likes the baseball shirts.
That's right. I have literally drawers full of them.
So he's prepared anytime he walks down the street and a baseball game breaks out.
That's right. 3/4 sleeves, colored sleeves. I love them. My favorite shirt for sure. What if I told you I was wearing one right now?
I would believe you. So, Bill, do you have a pick for the Final Four this weekend?
Who's in it?
So that's a no. What about the women's Final Four?
Iowa.
Can you name their star player?
Caitlin Clark.
Oh, my. Bill is, he's been tied up in his bunker. doesn't watch other sports at the moment. He's missing out on the most exciting time of the year.
I'm sorry.
People watch women's sports, Bill. You got to get on the bandwagon.
No, they should. I mean, it's been wildly entertaining.
So entertaining you haven't watched.
I really don't have TV, man.
It's the ESPN app, Bill.
So, all right, on that note, you have my pick, Iowa and UConn for the men. UConn's in it, right?
I think that's a wise pick.
Okay. So, all right. On that note, we'll wrap up here. Nick, thank you. If you want to email us at buffalopressbox@gmail.com or leave us a review, tell your friend. We welcome it. Nick, we'll do it again next week. Thank you for your insight, and thank you for joining us.